With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning and happy Friday. Thanks for joining us once again for your agriculture news. Today is Friday, September 15th. Coming up in today's show, has China found a solution for its corn stocks? We'll have more. But first, we start off this morning with Brian German.
Rain, wind, and lightning covered the middle of California Monday evening, causing some damage in Central Valley vineyards. The rain caused substantial concern for raisin growers, but it was the powerful winds that did the most harm. Jeff Bitter, vice president of operations with Allied Grape Growers, noted the level of damage caused by the storm.
Some structures were torn apart by some high winds. There were some power poles that were snapped and ended up laying into some raisin vineyards. And we actually had some rows completely blown over from the wind in some wine grape vineyards that the rows are now laying on the ground and unharvestable.
Growers have come to expect some of these types of weather events during this part of the season.
It's not uncommon to see rainstorms come through in September and into October when raisins are on the ground and when grapes are on the vine. So everybody just hopes that when an event does happen, that it's followed by sunny days, and specifically breezy sunny days.
I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
And we go to Taylor Hillman now.
Almond harvest is continuing throughout the state. UC Cooperative Extension pomology farm advisor and author of the Almond Doctor blog, David Dahl, said this season is turning out to be a little longer than anyone expected.
Well, so we're still harvesting crop, as you can imagine. Now we're pretty much into the late varieties, including our Monterey, Fritz's, and Butte and Padres. Some Butte and Padres have hit the ground, and some people have started shaking Monterey's. But as a whole, the season has been a lot longer than many of us were expecting. And I think a lot of that had to do with the really long bloom that we had earlier this year due to the weather.
Stay with Agnet West to find out how important it is for next season's crop to get water back on the trees in the orchard right after harvest. I'm Taylor Hillman for Agnet West Radio Network.
Increases in estimated rice production in India and a tightening of U.S. supplies are part of USDA's latest look at the rice situation. Rod Bain has details.
The Agriculture Department's rice outlook for September includes month-over-month increases in global production, highlighted by adjustments up in India's crops for the past and current marketing years.
India, the second biggest producer of rice in the world and tends to be the largest exporter of rice.
World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Seth Meyer says, meanwhile, the U.S. balance sheet reveals a slight change in production estimates from August.
Based upon some declines in planted and harvested area from NAS and a smaller, more modest decline in yield.
And lower supply estimates, including ending stocks.
And we're getting down to about a 13.1% stocks-to-use ratio. That's a pretty tight stocks-to-use ratio, so that's what's supporting prices. And it's across the board. It's medium short, both California and southern states, as well as the long grain rices.
With the season-ending average price estimate for rice up 50 cents from last month at $13.20 at the midpoint. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
China is planning to use ethanol to help draw down the nation's corn stocks, improve corn demand, and clean up smog in cities. Reuters says China plans to roll out the use of ethanol and gasoline nationally by 2020, pushing for E10 or 10% ethanol blend across what is the world's largest car market. The consumer market is changing. The demographics are also shifting. The Pork Checkoff is changing its marketing strategy to serve the needs of food service and retailers. National Pork Board Vice President of Domestic Marketing, Jared Sutton, says the Pork Checkoff is taking on an advisory role for these companies.
There's a lot of those companies that are really concerned and maybe shaking in their boots a bit to have good, solid, credible data and just market intelligence that helps them make smart decisions to be successful in their business. So millennials have now surpassed baby boomers in terms of numbers as well as buying power. And if you take apart that 75 million millennial population, 42% of that is multicultural. And so that's exciting and presents great opportunities, especially from Hispanic U.S. citizens, African-American citizens, Asian U.S. citizens. They consume a lot of meat and pork in particular.
The Pork Checkoff is adopting a new marketing strategy to meet the needs of today's marketplace that includes helping food companies navigate a changing business.
They're looking for innovative ideas. They want, you know, to have predictive analytics that'll help them spot trends that they can invest in. they're really concerned about getting caught up in some of these marketing traps too. And so by marketing traps, I mean label claims that may say one thing but could potentially be interpreted to mean something different or dupe the consumer, which is a cause for losing trust. And when you lose, as a brand, you lose that trust, it's awful hard to get back. And so there's just a lot of anxiety out there for how to step carefully through this new, evolving, changing consumer demographics, consumer needs, and the expectations that come from the expectations that come from the changing food world and what those demands are.
Sutton says the International Pork Checkoff approach is to provide unique value to the pork supply chain and solutions for industry stakeholders. This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I am your host, Sabrina Hill. This week's Western View is coming up. We'll be back in just a moment.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand, and that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
If you've been following the Bundy trials, you've probably noticed there's a trend going on, and it's not the trend people might have expected. The trend is against the government. They are losing most of their cases. The Bundy trials, of course, are the result of a group of American cattle ranchers protesting policies and procedures that they thought were unfair. Rancher Cliven Bundy had been withholding payment on his land use fees as part of the protest. Back in 2014, the BLM attempted to seize his cattle to collect the fees. Ranchers and others joined Bundy at his ranch, and an armed confrontation brought the cattle seizure to an end. In 2016, the Bundys and others took their protest to Oregon to show support for an Oregon rancher who was being jailed unfairly in their eyes. They took over the Malheur Wildlife Preserve and occupied it for several weeks. The principals in all these cases were charged with a variety of federal crimes, some of which had very long prison terms, but those trials are not ending well for the feds. As reported in High Country News, when it comes to trying the Bundys and their supporters, federal prosecutors now have a terrible record, winning just 2 convictions after 2 trials of 6 defendants in Nevada this year. And last fall, Bundy's sons Ryan and Ammon Bundy and 5 others were acquitted for their part in the armed takeover of the wildlife refuge in Oregon. The article, which was written by Tay Wiles, went on to say that the recent acquittals in the Nevada case raise big questions for prosecutors. Some legal experts say the nation's current political climate, characterized by distrust of federal authorities, may help explain the acquittals. In some ways, the government itself, alongside the defendants, went on trial in that Las Vegas courtroom. That sounds like a good description of what's happening in these Bundy trials. However, I'd take it a step further. These verdicts sound a lot like jury nullification. Jury nullification happens when a jury believes that there's something seriously wrong with the law or its application in these specific cases. These federal juries, in 2 states at different times, hearing a different set of facts, are sending a message to the federal government. There's something wrong at the BLM. Our leaders need to listen to that message. I'm Len Wilcox. That's the Western View from Agnet West.
Well, in today's livestock news, National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Director of Government Affairs, Danielle Beck, has an update of where things stand concerning comprehensive tax reform legislation in our nation's capital. And she also talks about NCBA's top goals for tax reform.
The timetable in terms of tax reform is pretty much in flux, but everyone from the administration to lawmakers on Capitol Hill recognize that the tax code here in the United States has not been fundamentally reformed in 31 years. President Trump ran a campaign based on sound business principles, which is clearly in his wheelhouse, and a top priority of his since day one has been reforming the tax code. While we're not really sure what it's going to look like in terms of when comprehensive tax reform legislation will be released on the Hill, we do know that members on the Hill are committed to getting something done by the end of this year. Ed, this is our opportunity to repeal the death tax permanently, once and for all. The death tax has been a burden on our nation's agricultural producers for over 100 years now, and so our number one goal in tax reform is to repeal the death tax. After that, we want to make sure that we're preserving provisions that are critically important to our producers. Right now, cash accounting, like-kind exchanges, the step-up in basis, utilizing interest deductions as a legitimate business expense, Section 179 expensing, all of these are tools in the toolbox that our producers use every single day when it comes to helping transition from one generation to the next, and also managing their expenses and their tax burden in years of high volatility and depressed markets. And so as Congress moves to reform the tax code, when we talk about simplification, it's great for the average individual, but simplification for farmers may actually be a bad thing depending upon what the rates actually look like. So our number two, and you know, equally as important priority, is preserving all of these tools in the toolbox, because without them, our farmers and ranchers may end up seeing a tax increase.
Now, NCBA does continue the new tax form issue campaign through the month of September. For more information, simply visit cattlemanfortaxreform.com. And to go along with that, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association did release their second video this week in that month-long media campaign to promote comprehensive tax reform. Now, the first video, if you didn't see it, was posted back on September 6th. It was viewed more than 109,000 times on Facebook, reached more than 200,000 people. But NCBA's second video in this campaign features Jay Wolf, a third-generation Nebraska rancher, who discusses the time, energy, and financial cost he's forced to spend on estate planning due to death tax. According to Wolf, you'd think in operating a business like this, the most important decisions would be strategic decisions about buying or selling cattle or buying and selling land. But he said, instead of the most important decisions I've made has been estate planning decisions, and they've impacted our ability to maintain our operation more than anything else, and that doesn't really seem right. If you'd like to see this, you can simply go to the NCBA website to learn more. That's beefusa.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Question, does it really matter how much shade is in a cow pasture? Does the size of a laying cage for a hen have anything to do with the egg she lays? Big question is, do you care? A lot of people do. There's a growing number of animal care groups in America. Their objective seems to be to harass farmers who produce our food. They form organizations that try to put pressure on farmers to change the way they produce our food. The fact is, an animal has to be killed before it can be processed into edible food. Is there any kind way to kill an animal? Laying hens are kept in solitary cages. Would the eggs taste better or be healthier if they lived in open range? As one official put it, if you don't farm, you shouldn't tell farmers how to produce their food. Good advice, but it's useless. And that's Ag Review for today. Everett Grinder, AgNet West.
The American Farm Bureau recently held a webinar titled, Will It Be a 2017 or 2018 Farm Bill? The webinar featured Mary Kay Thatcher, Senior Director of Congressional Affairs for the American Farm Bureau Federation, and a review of the status of ongoing discussions about the upcoming Farm Bill. Also offered Inside the Beltway insight into what is likely to be debated. We have for you now some audio from that webinar.
A little bit of background sort of about the budget, because unfortunately the budget comes into play big time when we think about this Farm Bill. When the Farm Bill was passed, it was estimated to cost $950 billion over the next 10 years. Kind of hard to believe that you're talking about a bill in agriculture that is really $1 trillion. I'm not sure I even know exactly what $1 trillion was. But when you see this slide, it's obvious that nutrition continues to be a very large part of the Farm Bill. Most of that is for the cost of the food stamp program, now called SNAP. And then you look at the second biggest piece is crop insurance, then conservation, and we go on to commodity programs. So, one of the biggest hurdles that we're going to face in this Farm Bill is something that we faced in the last Farm Bill, and that is, what are we going to do about some of the nutrition programs? Most of the ag community is not focused on those, but certainly having nutrition in there is one way, probably the best way, that we're able to continue to move the Farm Bill along. So Mr. Conaway has had numerous hearings on the SNAP program in the last year, but he said, he would really like to look at transitioning able-bodied people in the food stamp with no dependents out of the program, and he might also look at stronger work requirements. So to give you just a little bit of flavor then as to why that is an issue, if you look at the last Farm Bill, we had a fairly similar vote. Again, remember in 2013, the bill cost about $950 billion. About $750 billion of that were for nutrition programs, and only $200 billion for everything else that really affects agriculture. So a vote came up on final passage of the bill. We were looking at cutting $20 billion out of $750 billion in the SNAP program and $20 billion out of the other $200 billion elsewhere. And you can see that the Farm Bill failed, 195 to 234. When you look at that map on the right side, is that you have dark red spots. That's Republicans that voted for passage, or the dark blue, or Democrats that voted for passage, and the more muted ones are people who voted against. Obviously, way more Democrats voted against, but you had a pretty good, you had about a quarter of the Republican folks who did vote against it. Primarily, you had Democrats who said $20 billion in cuts for SNAP was too much, too many cuts. And you had Republicans that said $20 billion is simply not enough. So it's a very difficult issue to balance, and it'll be one that will likely come up again this year. Then this spring, too, you also had Pat Roberts as the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee that said, if I block grant the SNAP program, which is one of the items that has been discussed, I don't have 60 votes, which is what's needed to pass virtually everything in the Senate to do that. But on the other hand, if I don't do reforms, I don't have 60 votes either. So while it is it's difficult on both the House and the Senate side, probably more difficult for Chairman Conaway, but it is a big issue. So lots of times people say, well, let's just split the Farm Bill and have a nutrition bill and a farm-only bill. If you look at the breakdown of the spending, this is just a little different way of looking at the chart from three or four slides ago. You've got 76% of the funding that is indeed in the nutrition program. Then you go to 9% in crop insurance, 7% in commodities, 7% in conservation, and 1% in everything else. So if you pull that nutrition bill out and you look at a little bit of the makeup of the 435 members of Congress, What you find is we have only 34 out of 435 congressional districts that have more than 50% of their constituents that live in the rural areas. This is not 50% farmers. This is 50% rural communities, which means communities of 2,500 and less. So I would categorize these 34 congressional districts, fairly large percentage there in Arkansas, you can say, but I would characterize these as people that indeed really have to care about agriculture. On the other hand, if I do the flip side, there are 55 of those 435 districts that have 100% of their constituents in urban areas. You can kind of see little dots around the map is kind of what it looks like, but you're talking about Chicago and Denver and Phoenix and LA and San Diego. It's the big cities around there. But again, if you think about, okay, I'll split nutrition off and I'll have farm-only bills elsewhere, how would somebody like me ever convince those 55 members of Congress to vote for a farm-only farm bill? Very, very unlikely to happen. So in the long term, we absolutely have to keep the nutrition side married with the agricultural side. Now, one of the other kind of overarching issues that I think we're going to face as we think about this upcoming farm bill is, unfortunately, payment limits. It's something that comes up every farm bill. But I would remind you that I think this was a 2012 vote, might have been 2013, but when we were discussing the farm bill, Mr. Fortenberry from Nebraska offered an amendment that said, I'm going to set an adjusted gross income level of $250,000 on commodity programs. That amendment passed 230 to 194. I would strongly suspect that you're going to get more of those kinds of amendments, be it means testing, be it AGI, but it'll be a very difficult one for us to battle in Congress. So if I go back to that same slide that we had before, and I just split out the nutrition portion, this is what the farm bill funding for things that really affect farmers and ranchers looks like. You've got 39% of it in crop insurance, 30% in conservation, 29% in commodities. Everything else is about 3%. The reason I show you this is that I think it tells the story of why crop insurance continues to be the number one target from our opponents. And it's largely like the joke of why do you rob a bank? Because that's where the money is. Well, why do people look at crop insurance? Because there's way more money there that could be tried to be cut than there is under some of the other programs. Now, if I do look at that 1% of the big pie or 3% of the agricultural pie, you can see that this is how it makes up the rest of the funding is spent. Most of it in trade, a little bit research, energy, specialty crops, but really very few people look at anything in those categories for very much cuts because the amount of money you save is so small that it really makes very little difference. Now, when I talk about the Congressional Budget Office, that's kind of when people's eyes glaze over. But unfortunately, here in Washington, we sort of have to live by the sword of the congressional budget and die by it. And so the only way to really think about the toughest issues facing us in the Farm Bill is the budget and how that happens. So the Congressional Budget Office produces what they call a baseline three times a year. And the baseline is simply a projection at a specific point in time, what they believe that future federal spending on programs would be. And so if I said, for example, okay, I'm going to simply extend the current farm bill for the next 10 years, I'm not going to make a single change at all, well, then there's no increase in cost according to CBO and there's no decrease in cost because by law, they're required to say, that they assume current law continues forever. But if I decide to make changes, that's indeed when it will cost me money. So if I'm looking, for example, at, oh, I want to increase money for the market access program, or, oh, I want to increase a target price, or, oh, I want to do something to give more money to dairy producers, those all do what they call score, and it adds to the bill's cost. So everything that's done has to be scored, has to be sent to CBO and say, okay, if we want to do this, if we want to make this change, what would it actually cost us to do? So keep that in mind as we're thinking about budget stuff as we move forward. I think this is probably, when we think about the farm bill, one of the bigger items in showing you how much things can change. The way you look at this is that in blue, in 2014, when we passed the Farm Bill, the ARC program was supposed to cost $14.1 billion, according to CBO. Now you look at what they suggested in June a couple of months ago, and now they're saying, you know, no, the ARC score will only be $13.1 billion. But you can see the drastic increase in what they think will happen to the PLC programs. So scores indeed make a big difference in how you're considering changes in programs. If I look at what's happened with the Farm Bill over the last 3 years, you can see on the first column what each of those sections was estimated to cost. And you can look at what CBO said in June and the difference. So you see that commodity programs have cost $14 billion more than we thought they would when we passed the bill. And conservation programs have cost a couple of billion. Huge savings in the nutrition program, $77 billion, $12 billion in crop insurance, and almost $5 billion in everything else. So indeed, we are down $78 billion, and we will use that as we try to explain to folks that the Farm Bill is working the way it's supposed to. It's out there for the bad times, not the good. But it is important for folks like you to notice that of that $78 billion, $77.3 is indeed in the SNAP program.
Once again, listening to a webinar from the American Farm Bureau featuring Mary Kay Thatcher, Senior Director of Congressional Affairs for the American Farm Bureau Federation. This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
Agnet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. Agnet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from Agnet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
This is Farm City News Day. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. We'll be right back with more of the news that's important to you.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day. Wrapping up your agriculture news for today, producers in the super dry northern plains may finally see some relief from the drought this weekend. Gary Crawford reports.
For the U.S., overall, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says only 22% of pastures and rangelands are rated in poor to very poor condition.
But those numbers are exceptionally high as you move into states like Montana, 77% very poor to poor, and not far behind Oregon at 68%, North Dakota 66%, and Washington State 63%.
It's been like that all summer, but Rippey told us, hold on.
We have a significant weather pattern change coming later this week. Not only will it turn sharply cooler, but we are looking at the likelihood for 1 to 3 inches of rain, even some snow in the high mountains, and that should turn the tide on some of these exceptional drought conditions that are affecting Montana and other areas of the northern high plains, maybe starting to turn the corner on this drought.
Too late to help pastures very much, but
hopefully this moisture coming in time for winter wheat, as producers have been planting in dust.
And there's still a month to get that wheat established. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Increases in estimated rice production in India and a tightening of U.S. supplies are part of USDA's latest look at the rice situation. Rod Bain has details.
The Agriculture Department's rice outlook for September includes month-over-month increases in global production, highlighted by adjustments up in India's crops for the past and current marketing years.
India, the second biggest producer of rice in the world and tends to be the largest exporter of rice.
World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Seth Meyer says, meanwhile, the U.S. balance sheet reveals a slight change in production estimates from August.
Based upon some declines in planted and harvested area from NAS and a smaller, more modest decline in yields,
and lower supply estimates, including ending stocks.
And we're getting down to about a 13.1% stocks-to-use ratio. That's a pretty tight stocks-to-use ratio, so that's what's supporting prices. And it's across the board. It's medium short, both California and southern states, as well as the long grain rices.
With a season-ending average price estimate for rice up 50 cents from last month at $13.20 at the midpoint. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.